Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The name of this podcast is The Alt in Our Stars. I'm your host, Chris Payne, and I am here in the Billboard office today at the top of our building overlooking a foggy day in New York with Incubus. What's up, guys?
Hi.
Hello. Hi.
I think I dropped in on a little conversation about the best of 80s and 90s cinema. Was that where we were headed?
Yeah, specifically montages. We were admiring the montages of the Rambo franchises, the Rocky franchises. Karate franchises, there were lots of montages. Whenever there was karate in a film in the 80s, there were some montages.
Anytime there was training happening and you know, under high stress and emotions, there was always a good montage, and the music was vital.
And I was talking about like being either at, near, or just past the limit. The limit being that sort of philosophical, or the edge, same difference, but it was an important sort of topic of that era. I think it was highly influential to our band.
Montages. Yeah. Maybe like a montage of like getting the band together. It's like record, and you guys haven't been together in a while, so you're kind of rusty.
But like training.
You forget how to play the guitar.
Yeah.
I've definitely forgotten how to play guitar before.
On the edge. On the edge. Writing the record or not.
Yes.
And it's like, yo, we need an album. I can't play guitar.
Oh, here we go. Yeah.
It's all about.
We start training in a barn and like lifting rocks and running up mountainsides and, you know.
Yeah, pushing things with your fingers.
It's all about overcoming the struggle.
Yes, the montage.
Yeah, so you guys are back together doing press for new music. So it's been a few years, I guess, since you guys have done that.
Yeah.
Doing press all together as a band. I like it.
Yeah, we have a tour coming up, and we're really excited about that as well. So we want to share our joy with people who are interested to know about it.
Word. Well, that's exactly what I want to do. I want to fill people in on like the past few years of Incubus since the promotion for If Not Now, When wrapped up. So things are starting to really ramp up. So you mentioned the touring. Let's talk about the touring first, because Brandon, I interviewed you a couple years ago for Sons of the Sea, and I think you were about to go to South America for Incubus. You were really excited to go surfing. So I just find it really interesting what it's like to tour where you've been lately, aside from the U.S., South America, Australia. What is a rock concert like there and everything that leads up to it? How is it different from playing like the States?
Good question. Whenever we go on a tour, there's always training.
Montage.
There's a montage worthy training. That's actually for serious. Like if we don't practice, we suck. I suck. I'll take it back. I'm terrible if I don't rehearse before we do a tour. Anyway, a rock concert overseas for Incubus. I feel like it's just different. You know what I mean? Anytime we have the opportunity to play music together in front of people, it's super fun and chaotic. We kind of know what's going to happen because we sort of write the songs down beforehand. You can never really account for the chaos that ensues with a live audience and instruments that are plugged in and how you feel that day and all of those, you know, all of those elements that are thrown into the mix. But when we play in South America, the people, they sing a lot louder than really any other place in the world. And they're so into it, they actually like sing the guitar riffs as well.
And then in between songs too. That's
yeah.
Start to do chants and every place is different. They have a different song that I guess it's related to sports events or something, but it's just crazy. The music stops and their music starts, so mm-hmm. it's wild.
Imagine what happens after the show.
So like a soccer game kind of atmosphere, with like chanting, almost like cheering you guys on, filling in that empty space.
It's pretty surreal.
Huh?
I think that in a lot of the cities. Thank you, Brandon, for putting this microphone in front of my face. In many of the cities in South America, we kind of get the feeling that they really appreciate, you know, the distance that we travel to come and be there to play a concert, and it just seems like, you know, they might not get as often of a chance to see the band that they want to see. It's not just with us. I think a lot of our contemporaries have the same sort of they experience the same thing, where I think there's just a massive appreciation for music in their culture, especially in the youth culture. So when we go down there and play, it's like they're so celebratory, and it's amazing to be in that atmosphere. We love being there. It's
that being said too, that you can you hold it for me, bro?
Yes.
We just did a show. I don't know. This is kind of.
Yeah, bro.
Whoa.
Sorry if my breath's
kicking.
That's
not part of the montage.
Mikey and I face to face. We just did two shows this weekend here on the East Coast, and the audiences were actually amazing. It was as if we hadn't played concerts in the United States for like 3 years.
You would think.
Really cool. Yeah. So, you know, to answer your question, like, it's a little bit different energetically everywhere, but we're a very, very fortunate band that the, you know, people who come to our concerts are pretty passionate about what we're doing, and we're very passionate about what we're doing. So it's a nice matchup.
Yeah. So from hanging out, surfing, getting the sun in South America, Australia, this summer up to Jersey, Chicago, Wisconsin, but with the Deftones, which I think is a pretty interesting lineup. Because I think both of your bands have kind of followed similar trajectories, with coming from like a similar scene of rock music, late 90s, early 2000s. About to put out music for the first time in a few years, or like you guys just have, they're going to. So I think it's a really interesting pairing. Are you guys close with them?
Yeah, the Deftones are kind of an important part of the history of our band, and I think that we may also be an important part of the history of their band as well. We've done a lot of touring together in the past. It's been a while. It's been a few years since then, but early in our careers we kind of helped each other out a lot, and yeah, we're friends with all those guys, and we've just, you know, it's funny, after doing this for a really long time, there's just this camaraderie and respect I think that builds up amongst bands that are even still around, you know.
Yeah.
Like for our contemporaries that are still, you know, doing what they love to do and still making music, anybody that can prolong a career for that length of time is like, there's just a lot of respect there. And I think our fans appreciate that lineup. I think there are a lot of people that love the Deftones, people that are Incubus fans, and vice versa. So and it's shown so far. Like we were just told that we've sold in excess of 120,000 tickets already for this tour, which is awesome. And
all in one city.
Yeah, that's
what venue
was
that?
Crazy.
Central Park.
But that being said, sorry, let me just take that. If you're friends with a band that's been a band for a really long time, or you're in a band and your friend's band's been a band a really long time, just don't ever say to them, "Oh, right on, man, you're still going for it." Backhanded insult, man. You just say, "Good for you," slap on the back or a pat on the ass, and keep going. Just don't say the first thing that I said. It's mean. Yeah. Sorry, go on.
Why do people say that to you?
Every once in a while, someone's like, "Oh, you guys are still going for it?" It's like, oh.
Yay. You guys are still making music, huh?
Yeah, you're still a dick, huh?
No, we're happy. We're happy to be able to, I mean, we're 24 years into our existence as a band. And, you know, to be able to do things that keep it feeling new is awesome. But yeah, back to your point about the Deftones, it's awesome to be able to tour with those guys, and it's going to be fun.
Yeah, so I will not congratulate you guys simply for just still going for it, still being a band, but the new music is really interesting, and I will talk about it, but I get the feeling that switching labels being done with Epic, going to Island, seems like it's kind of reinvigorated you guys. Because, like, with the last few Incubus albums and Sons of the Sea, I liked them, and it seemed like it was kind of a trajectory that made sense with how the sound was progressing. But with the four new songs and the new EP, it feels like start over, like different things going on. So you're nodding, you think so?
I think so. I mean, us signing with Island is really exciting for us, but I think that we were well into our reinvigoration, is that a word? Mm-hmm. Before that, like we just started playing music again together, and we didn't have a record label, we didn't have a manager, we had no plan. Some of us didn't even have pants. And sorry, that was really random. And but we just started jamming, and some good stuff was happening, and it was really fun and interesting, and it was great to not have a plan. And so if a plan has started to take shape around the music, which is always a good thing. A lot of, I mean, we have been guilty in the past of making a plan and then making music, you know, and that's not the best way to go about things, I think. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, a lot of it is timing, and, you know, we, like Brandon said, we got to this place where we had no plan and no trajectory and no anything. And I think we just needed that. It was like a corner to turn around, and it presented us, I think, with a certain level of excitement. And the music that started happening, the four songs that are on that EP, you know, they were written and recorded at the same time. Like we just kind of set our stuff up in a studio. We got a great opportunity to get set up in a recording studio that we were also just kind of writing songs in, and we figured we would just take advantage of that opportunity. And again, with no real agenda other than just making music, and it happened very unexpectedly. We didn't plan on that at all. We just were kind of like, hey, like I called up the guys and was like, hey, there's a studio available and we could take it. You want to do it? And everybody was like, yeah, let's do it. And we went in and just, and we're, it still feels like that actually, because it's happening naturally. It's not being forced or motivated by anything other than just.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Joy. Hey, would you say that in lieu of a plan, we were, or not in lieu of, but we were at a point, perhaps, in our career where we were at the limit?
We might have been staring over the edge. Mm-hmm.
Close to the danger zone.
We pushed it to the limit. It's a good place to be.
You want to take it to the limit.
Take it there. Yeah. Definitely not. You don't pull it to the limit. You definitely got to push it.
You can be pulled to the limit by an external force. Limit. But
thrust it to the limit.
Just cram it right down into the limit.
Yeah, so it definitely sounds like the album and everything. It came to the EP, rather. Four songs. It sounds like it came together before Island came into the picture.
It did.
Yeah.
The songs had been pretty much written and recorded before signing with Island. That actually took a while as well. Like, there was a period of time where we were kind of going back and forth with them a lot. And we, you know, a couple times where we weren't sure if it was going to work out or not. But the
dating.
Yeah, we were courting each other. But the thing that was awesome about it was that there were some really wonderful people that we worked with, especially during our early days being at Epic.
Okay.
And it turns out that many of those people are part of Island's framework. So that all worked out in a really, in a really natural way, where we found ourselves working with people that we really liked and had long-term relationships with. So, yes.
Yeah, because I was going to say Trustful, if you were to sign with the label first and they were going to be very, like, domineering over what they want, Trustful doesn't sound like the prototype single song that a label would want to lead something off.
Not
with.
At all.
And I like it, and I like it for a lot of ways because it's not that, like a 6.5-minute song.
Well, the label actually, when they heard it, they really liked it as well, and they were really supportive of it. So that was a good sign for us.
They didn't just
say,
"Good job, you're still going."
Well, people are selling albums, you know, and having success in that world for many different reasons than, you know, in previous times. Like, there are a lot of different ways that people discover music now, not just getting played on the radio. I mean, you know, that's still an important thing to them, but at the same time, you know, good music is good music, and I think a lot of people realize that a song like that is something that our audience will truly appreciate, you know, just, at least it just seems that way.
I feel like if you play that in South America, and hopefully they do this in America, there would be good space in that song to drop in chants, to drop in some audience.
Maybe you should do the remix, man.
Yeah, let's do it. Remix debut.
We just actually, I don't know if I should say this, but I'm going to anyway. We just did our own edit of Trustfall for an overseas version of it, and they wanted it under 4 minutes.
Whew.
We basically...
So we just cut Jose out.
well said. Yeah. So there is going to be a... It's actually exactly 4 minute long.
It's actually 3:50.
Did you get it down to 3:50? What'd you cut out?
Well, we made a bunch of changes at the end, remember?
Oh, that's right.
And the song is just called Trust now.
Yeah.
It's called...
Trust Side
and a Half.
So let's play a little bit of Trustfall. This will be the best 30 seconds.
Now I am great, so what's in front of me? Right in front of me. Whoa, it's only a trustful. Into the arms of all. Love is a blessing, cause like you say,
Let's talk about this four-song model, because I think that's interesting with a lot of artists trying different things these days, thinking, oh, the album is dead, the album is more important than ever, who knows. So with you guys, was the vision of making four songs together and putting that out, was that something like that, or was it just like, oh, we have four songs?
It was a little bit of, actually, it's kind of all of the above, and there's some other things in there, too. There was the fact that we only had four songs at that point. There was the fact that we are becoming more and more aware that the album model seems to be going the way of the dodo, even though all of us, I know I can say this with confidence, still love and sort of cry for the 10 to 12 song LP thing, because that's how we grew up. That's what we know. We know, actually, when we even go before cassette, you know, we grew up on like side A and side B,
right,
with records. And so, to that, and then there's also this thing that even if we put out a record at this point in our career, we can't play more than a few new songs in our set. Anyway, we could, but you start losing people, because at this point in our career, you know, this would be our eighth offering as a band. People want to hear the stuff that they like love, and so we're taking that into consideration as well. So side A. How am I doing so far on this description?
You're good, yeah.
Okay, so side A comes out next week, and then the plan is for side B to come out later in the year, so you will actually have a full record, but
okay.
Side A comes out first, and then side B comes out later, and we're touring amongst it. So I've been saying it ad nauseum, but it's the sort of, it's us having our cake and eating it too.
Yeah, so we...
That's the new business model.
So like another four songs for side B?
It'll probably be more than that.
Okay.
Yeah.
We might even make a side C. You know, actually part of this as well is
the future is four dimensional.
Yeah, all the stuff that Brandon just said, but and also there's this built-in spontaneity to the whole thing. We've had many experiences where we've written and recorded music, and then it could be a year before it gets released, you know, like, and then by that time it feels old and you're sick of it, or, you know, this situation gave us the flexibility to just go in and write and record a few songs, put them out, go on tour, play them, come back, write and record some more songs, put those out. We're just at this place in our career where we feel like we really enjoy and appreciate the freedom to be able to do that. And right now, to go in and record a full album, it feels a little bit overwhelming in certain ways. Also, just because we'd like to be able to go and play shows as well, you know, during the time that we're writing and recording. So this just seems to be working for us really well right now.
Mm.
You know, it doesn't mean that that's how we'll always do it, but for the time being, it satisfies a lot of different needs, elements, whatever, you know, however we can describe it. It's a good thing.
Yeah, and you both touched on that it's a natural thing, this, instead of being bound by putting out the full length all at once, putting out smaller bursts of songs here and there. Yeah. And I think if you look throughout music history, before the album was a big thing, or at times even when it was in certain scenes, it was more of a singles-based game.
Yep.
If you look back further and further. So I think it kind of shows that often it's just sort of like consumer trends, just like whatever technology is big at the time, that kind of dictates what musicians have to put out, how many songs at once. So you're kind of bypassing that. It's just what's natural.
Yeah, I think the spontaneity element of it is really cool. You know, it just feels right. It feels so right. It takes us to the limit.
Yeah, so let's talk about more of the songs. Because, I mean, the convenient thing about only doing four at once, you can focus on more. And so one thing that just, like, really struck me was how different the four songs were. Like, Make Out Parties is very explicit kind of, like, R&B rock song. Dance Like You're Dumb is, like, this frantic, really catchy song that basically sounds like what the title suggests. What is the Pink Boba Fett? What's going on with that?
That was the original title for the song.
Really? Some copyright infringement issues with...
No. Well, that occurred to me. There probably would have been, but it occurred to me that Make Out Party was a more evocative title and was really... that got to the heart, so to speak. It got to the crotch of the song a little quicker. Oh, I'm sorry. Dance Like You're Dumb. Thank you. So many songs.
So many songs. So many working titles that...
Yeah.
Will all change.
Pink Boba Fett was the working title for Dance Like You're Dumb. Yeah. Anyway, it's still a lyric in the song. People hopefully haven't heard that song yet. Those of you who haven't illegally downloaded it. I didn't look at you just now.
I got it legally.
Good. Thank you. Yeah.
Quote unquote.
Well, you only have a few days to wait if you haven't heard it.
Yeah. Anyway, writing lyrics is a strange event. I'm sure most people have written in a diary or done a paper for school or for work or something. And the way that our brains work when we're constructing most things is sort of linear. We usually head in a straight line. And then there's other forms of writing where stuff just sort of spills and you don't try and stop it. And just random imagery and references from what you grew up with and stuff just sort of spills out in a more nonlinear way. And so the way that I like to write lyrics is a little more nonlinear, and then I kind of organize it into better patterns after the fact. So there's like a spill effect, and then I clean it up a little bit, and it gets into rhythm and things. That's how the Pink Boba Fett thing came in. I was just thinking of like an assassin, but it was a female assassin, a bounty hunter.
More specifically.
Yeah. And, I mean, I'm super excited about Star Wars coming out, too. I just saw a picture this morning of Harrison Ford with Chewbacca and some of the other actors sitting in the Millennium Falcon.
Chewbacca hasn't gone gray at all.
Not at all. He started using like product in his hair because he looks good.
Hipster Chewbacca.
Hipster Chewbacca. Like in the picture, it's the thing. It's like you see Harrison Ford. He's like, he's like an older Han Solo and it's awesome. But then behind him is Chewbacca like leaning on his elbow, like over Harrison Ford with his like face hair slicked back. It's amazing. I can't wait for this movie.
Well, he got a stylist after, like, post-Empire. Yeah. Kind of like a more easy lifestyle.
Yeah. It's to come up, you blow up a couple of Death Stars, and then you're rolling it,
right? And now in this bullet belt across his chest, it's not bullets, it's like Pez. That would be rad, right?
What?
A gentler, kinder Chewbacca.
Yeah, yeah. So we're talking about lyrics. That's how we got to Chewie via Boba Fett. So yeah, Brandon, you've released, like, aside from like writing lyrics for Incubus, you've released like books of lyrics and drawings and stuff like that. So I guess you're very used to just like kind of spilling your guts and like letting it all out there. Just like whether, and it doesn't have to be in songs.
Yeah. I don't know why. Since I was a teenager, I've always, probably from learning how to journal, and I always draw in my journals, and I would always spill my guts in my journals. And at some point I perhaps hit a level of narcissism that I felt it was time to share my gut spilling with other people. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's there's something about it. You know, it's very basic self-expression. Everyone has different ways of doing it. And so I've always enjoyed drawing, painting, writing things down, writing thoughts down. Sometimes they sort of get into motion and go into songs, and sometimes they just end up on a piece of paper that hopefully no one will ever read, and then sometimes I share them. So it's fun, though. I feel very, very blessed to be able to do it.
Yeah, and as far as the instrumentation goes, it's like, sounds like you guys are having a lot of fun. That's basically the vibe I get from across like the four songs.
Fun and coffee. We have a lot of coffee.
Yeah, when we talked about Sons of the Sea, you said lots of coffee with that, so it's an Incubus thing. It's just a band-wide...
I think it's a human thing.
Well, also in the studio where we're working, they've got this sort of like nuclear coffee maker that there are two different strengths of coffee, and they're both pretty strong, but the stronger one is like really strong. I can only handle like a little bit of it, but I think everybody's drinking it a lot. And so it's coming across in the music.
So when it gets to the point where you're like kind of trembly and uneasy, that just helps the process. That's not a bad thing.
That's rock and roll right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I don't know if coffee. It helps. I don't know if it helps, but it happens.
I've never had a cup of coffee in my life.
All right, well, Kill has it.
Yeah. I've never had a cup of coffee in my life.
I want to see what happens. Will you go have a cup of coffee with
me? You don't want to see that, bro.
Let's have a cup of coffee in New York.
Yeah.
And then go someplace.
Yeah, just keep me off the high buildings.
I'll take you to Central Park and we can just run wild together. Okay. That'd be fun. Right.
Might lose my pants.
No, it's true. We're not a huge drug band, so to speak. You know, I feel like there were different eras in rock and roll, and a lot of times the drugs of choice had a lot to do with the kind of music, and also the sort of the popular drugs of that time in the culture, I think had something to do with what music was popular as well. But I'm not saying there are no drugs in the band, but we've just never been into like heavy drugs. So caffeine has been a drug of choice for this band, and I think it's worked for us. You can't see my hands right now from all those of you listening, but I'm shaking pretty violently right now. I'm kind of okay with it.
Word. I think, yeah, kind of interesting how you say it goes with eras.
It's true, right? Like, think about it. Like, right now, the most popular music, it seems to me, in the world is, like, electronic dance music. And, like, people in the hundreds of thousands are gathering in these giant arenas to watch a dude up on stage, you know, behind his computer. And it's blowing their minds.
Yeah,
that doesn't happen on weed.
I mean, it's like, I guess to put it in like vague terms, it's like the things that build you up, uppers, coffee, caffeine. It's one of those things.
Sure.
So you guys exist on one end of it, the probably more sustainable end of it, and it works.
And they say it's good for men's prostate health too. true story. Coffee. Not a lot, a little bit. Molly, we don't know
it's
yet.
It's an alternative study.
Yeah.
It's a short-term fix.
Yeah. You just put the Molly in your butt and your prostate does well. Yeah. We can say these kinds of things, right?
Absolutely. This is podcast land.
All right.
But yeah, where we were going with the coffee, I said it sounded like, in general, you guys, instrumentation-wise, it sounded like you guys are just having a lot of fun. Take me through that, because I know what like Brendan has done in the interim with Sons of the Sea, but what have you guys been doing without Incubus, and like did that help inspire you more for going back and doing Incubus now?
We've been playing in different things. I know Hose has been doing some studio stuff. I've done some studio stuff. Chris has done some DJing, and Mike's done a lot of producing. And we've just kind of hung up the hat for a second, and that in itself gives you a chance to breathe and reflect on what you just finished doing. So getting away from it kind of opened up a little air and made it, at least for me, I can say it made me excited to come back kind of aggressively and really make some music that sticks out. You know, there's lots of electronic music happening right now and lots of mellow kind of soft stuff. So it's kind of a fun time to not be that way, mm-hmm. to be edgier and a little bit louder, I think. I don't know. You guys agree?
Yeah. I mean, I think we've been doing something for so long that it was just, we didn't really know anything else, and we sit really close to it. And the fact that we just took time, an indefinite amount of time off, everyone just did whatever they do at home. You know, everyone just sort of, just, you know, enjoyed life, you know. So I think just after a year or plus of that, writing together as a band just sounded fresh. And I think all of us, not knowing when that was going to happen, you know, talking about it really excited us. And it really did feel just like a completely new sort of era for us. I mean, there were so many things we didn't know, you know, as far as label management or when we'd put out a record or anything. All that was sort of exciting to us. And once we got the ball rolling, it was really fun. Mm-hmm. And that not knowing part was definitely part of it. And it kind of coalesced as we went together, you know.
You hear it in the sound.
Yeah, mm-hmm. so I think that's a lot of what's being put down and what people are hearing, what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know I had that feeling, and this is a totally unorthodox way of us writing and recording, and that part is sort of exciting too. And I'm still not totally know which way is better or not, but for now it's just a different route for us, and it's been pretty cool, you know.
Yeah, because you guys just, like, I think for the most part have always been kind of like doing your own thing, but still you can't help but like know what's going on, like these trends that you pass through that are going on in music in the big picture. And like, you've been a band for what, like 20 years exactly, or
24.
Yeah, so a lot of things have passed through, and it's interesting how, like, we were saying how, like, DJ culture is so big now, and without forcing it, I think Incubus, like, it just naturally fits with that kind of thing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
we have a DJ in the band. You know?
So yeah, without forcing it, it fits.
Yeah. It's. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the. I think one of the most fortunate things about our, and it's a blessing and a curse. Like, we don't really fit neatly into any sort of category. We can do musically. We can do whatever we want, and it's exciting and fun. And that's why whenever we make music, the songs tend to not sound like each other. They tend to be stylistically kind of independent of each other. And, you know, some people see that as a weakness, but to me, it's always just made it interesting. It's always just been like each song is its own little adventure.
Its own style. Each song has self-contained style.
Yeah, it's its own adventure, and we're not trying to nail down like any one thing. I guess that's just sort of a product of, like, for me, I have a really short attention span in mm-hmm. certain respects, so I need to do a lot to sort of keep myself still, you know? Yeah. It takes a lot for me to sit still. And so one way of accomplishing that is to just constantly be, like, reinventing or changing or doing new things. And I think that informs what we're doing in a constructive way that keeps it from getting stale.
Yeah.
And then when you kind of put it all together, it kind of makes this one piece. You know, it's like a journey through that piece. And that's sort of how all of our records sort of come about, you know. And it makes it exciting for myself just to write music in this, because it's constantly challenging.
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten to work with a bunch of, like, really young artists in the last couple of years. Like, and that's been really eye-opening, because it just puts a lot into perspective for me, as far as like how many things, like, we've seen as a band, like, come and go, like, different yeah. trends and different bands and different different, you know, just musical movements, and it's awesome. We've always felt very sort of independent of everything, And we're just continuing along that trajectory.
Yeah. What have you seen go where you were like, yep, knew it all along?
You know what? I don't know if there's ever any real way to say that, because everything, it seems like at some point, kind of comes back around in some way. So it's like,
Mike's got a closet full of stovepipe jeans. He's waiting to break out. Just waiting for the right moment.
Like,
what jeans?
Stovepipe, you know, the old, like, the Jenko jeans, the big.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I never heard that term before. Stovepipe jeans. I never heard that.
Your legs look like stovepipes.
They're just straight.
Yeah.
Maybe bootcut jeans will make a comeback. No,
I just remember, you know, there was a good period of time there in the 90s where it seems like everybody around me thought that, like, nothing that came from the 80s would ever be cool. It really felt that way. And people, there was even, you know, it must have been 93, 94, when the movie Dazed and Confused came out. And they even made a joke in that film about, like, how, you know, there was some joke about how, like, maybe the 80s, they were talking about how the 60s were cool, the 70s sucked, maybe the 80s will be amazing.
They said the 80s will be radical.
Yeah, and I remember the whole theater was like, yeah, right, whatever, you know.
Yeah, nostalgia cycles. It's actually really predictable.
But it goes to show you, it's like, the 80s were an amazing time in music. There's so much incredible stuff that happened in that time period. So it's like, you know,
it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, who knows? It's tough to predict those things. There was actually, I just want to say, like, I remember reading an article in Rolling Stone, I believe, or maybe it might have been Time magazine. It was some big publication where they were talking about how all of a sudden, like, Blondie was cool again. Like, Blondie couldn't get arrested for 20 years, and all of a sudden now Blondie's cool. And it was weird because, like, I remember reading that, and it made sense at the time that I read it, but now it's like, I mean, that music always sounded cool. Like, it's funny, but perception changes over time. Sorry.
I was just going to say, for me, the moral of the story is that there's no era that is like where culture stops.
Yeah.
Where it's like, we've done it. This is it. Every era will always have its, like, stalwarts and its, like, bright moments. But then I think the moral of the story for me is that wherever we are now is the best. And in 10 years, that'll be the best. 10 years from now, 20 years ago will have been the best. You can't hang your hat on any of it. So that's what's fun about art and being artists, is that we're not trying to actually, like, nail down any one best era or best sound. We're just trying to swim in it and have fun.
Yeah.
Hello.
Well, I think that's a good note to end on, with a moral. Yeah?
Awesome.
Sure.
Cool. So yeah, that was a lot of fun. Thanks so much, guys.
No worries.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, so this concludes another episode of the Alt and Our Stars podcast. Remember, you can subscribe to the podcast by clicking the iTunes link towards the bottom of the store. You can also listen to archived episodes there. Until next week, we post every Friday, so have a good weekend, guys.